happy to be here and moderate, and I've had the pleasure of meeting and moderating with each of the candidates before moderating the discussion. I'm an employment and civil rights lawyer, not a probate lawyer, not my expertise, but I am deeply involved and concerned with issues of the court and access to justice, and I have a lot of pleasure discussing with these candidates and other candidates those kinds of issues. So to introduce the seat briefly, and each of you is more of an expert on the seat, and we'll let you tell us a bit more about it. The probate court, probate docket, and this particular seat that the candidates are running for. But it is mostly a probate seat. It is mixed with a family law docket. That's possible under the unified court system in the Washtenaw County. And the probate seat, for those that don't know, deals with wills, trusts, guardianships, estates, conservatorships, mental health issues. The family court docket would deal with divorces, would deal with child custody issues, things like that. Of course, as I said, each of you will have time to describe more what this seat means, what this race means to you. We have five candidates here. We have sitting since last time we were here. Last time I moderated a panel, I accidentally called Judge outside Judge, and she said, "No, I'm a referee right now," and that's the proper term. And I said, "Okay, I just want to get it right." Now she is in fact Judge. So we have one incumbent seat that's running, Judge Outzaij, and four other candidates will talk a bit about their experiences and background today. What we're going to start with is a 3-minute introduction by the candidates. There is, in fact, an order listed on my agenda here, so I think we'll start with that order from Jane Bassett on the end down here, introducing herself and her qualifications. And then for proceeding questions, just a matter of process, we'll alternate and move down the row as to who gets to start answering those questions. Thank you, Ms. Bassett.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Okay, I think I've got it now. Thank you, David, and thank you to the forum for having us here. I think it's so important for the voters to get to know each of us, to know our personalities and our background. So often people don't end up voting for the judicial candidates because they don't know the judicial candidates. So I'm pleased to see everyone here. I'm also very pleased to see the children here being involved in the political process so early. My name is Jane Bassett. When we last convened this forum with David moderating, I was not officially on the ballot because the signatures were being challenged. For those of you who haven't gotten the word, I have gotten past that challenge, well past that challenge, and I am on the ballot. Very pleased to be on the ballot. I have 20 years of probate experience here in Washtenaw County as a private practitioner. I came out of law school, opened my own practice, and for 6 years it was just me. And then I started adding staff. We're now up to an office staff of 11, 3 attorneys and 8 support staff. We do everything from decedent's estates to serving as guardian and conservator for people who don't have others to do that for them. We also do adoptions. I have been very involved with the family law work on the national level for marriage equality rights and for adoption equality rights. So I've got background experience in family law as well. My understanding is that the docket that is currently set, that Judge Outzweis is working every week, is the docket that's going to be the docket moving forward. And I went back over the last few weeks and just kind of did some quick calculations. Of that docket, about anywhere between 60 to about 85% of the cases each week are cases involving vulnerable adults. So that would be adult guardianships and conservatorships, minor guardianships and conservatorships, so for also for children, and mental health and developmental disability guardianships. So you can see that the broad, the bulk of what the probate seat will handle has to do with disability, aging issues, developmental disabilities, mental health issues. And that's exactly what I've been in the trenches working with families for the past 20 years. Center's doing and making sure that people have access to the resources that they need, the community resources and supports, and the financial resources and supports that they need in order to take care of their family members. So that's who I am, and I would ask that you take a look at my website and my Facebook, and let me know if you have any questions.
Great. We'll go
to I have to say that was perfect. It was 2 minutes, 57 seconds, and 43 tenths.
I'm getting a good sense for this as we go.
So the challenge is on. For Tamara Garwood, if you want to tell us a bit about yourself and see if you can come in a little closer to that 2 minute mark.
I'm a baker, so usually I have to pay close attention to time. Well, first I want to thank everybody for being here, and certainly thank the party for having us. The last time I was here was not long ago for the Passport to Pittsfield event with my children. And I tell you that because my children are such a large part of my life, and that's one of the reasons why I'm involved in this race and why I work so hard at my job. I think it's critical that we as lawyers and as judges protect those who cannot and will not protect themselves, and oftentimes that means children. So a little bit about me in particular. I graduated from the University of Michigan. I came here from Wisconsin in a very small town where winters were very long and very cold, and summers were very cold as well. I studied political science and Italian, and then graduated from Detroit College of Law. I've interned for a federal magistrate judge handling prisoner rights cases and Social Security disability claims. And I also work for the Wayne County Office of the Prosecuting Attorney. There, I was involved in the Child and Family Abuse Bureau, where I handle personal protection order matters and domestic violence cases. Again, continuing my theme of protecting those who cannot and will not protect themselves. In private practice for 15 years, I've handled family law matters and probate matters. I am trained as a conservator, I'm trained as a guardian, I'm trained as a mediator, and in collaborative law. I always encourage my clients, whenever possible, to resolve their differences outside of the courtroom. People are then more inclined to follow the resolutions when they're active participants and they come up with their own solutions to their problems. I also serve as an arbitrator and a guardian ad litem. So I'm not afraid to make the difficult decisions that a judge will need to make. And again, as the mother of two young girls, whom we had a little fight even this morning about what should be for breakfast, I make difficult decisions at home too. I bring a great deal of compassion to the bench, an open mind, and as a middle child, I really believe in the importance of fairness. So I would invite you to visit my website, Garwood for Judge, my Facebook page by the same name, and feel free to contact me, garwoodforjudge @gmail.com, and ask any questions that you might have. I've been surprised over the last week or so that I'm actually getting phone calls from voters who just want to know more about me, who want to know more about the election and more about the probate court. So I would certainly invite you to get in contact with me, and again, thank you for having us. And I did get cut off.
You got 15 seconds to spare.
That was only 2 minutes, 48 seconds, and 6 tenths, Ms. Garwood.
So now we'll pass to Constance Jones.
Wow.
If you want to tell us a little bit and see if you can get closest to 3 minutes without going over.
Very tricky stuff. My name is Connie Jones. I'm pleased to be here. I'm not familiar with the Pittsfield Township Hall, and it's a gorgeous place to be, so wonderful. I wanted to talk first about why I decided to get in the race, and I entered the race after last October the trial court came out with an announcement that this seat was going to primarily do probate law, the circuit court seat primarily do family law, and that's when I sort of threw my hat in the ring. I have been an attorney for 26 years. I am a graduate of the University of Michigan Undergrad School, also graduate of the University of Michigan Law School. After law school, I clerked in the federal court for 2 years. Then I worked for UAW Legal Services. Both of those jobs were up in the Flint area. Then I came, I've always been a resident of Ann Arbor and started a private practice here. In the initial years of my private practice, I worked a lot in the family law area, doing a lot of divorces and other types of family law related things. I also worked in the juvenile court for about 10 years under Judge Wheeler. And over time, I eventually came to take on more and more in the probate area, and that's really primarily where I have practice. I do a lot of wills and trusts, and I do a lot of litigation with regard to decedent's estates, and then I also do a lot of guardianships and conservatorships. I myself serve as a guardian and conservator probably for about 15 people at present, both a guardian conservator, trustee, various roles such as that. And one of the things that I've been going out and speaking a lot about is the need, I think, for the probate court to have a larger pool of people who we could call upon to engage as guardians and conservators, which is not to say that I take appointing somebody in that role lightly, because I think it's a very serious undertaking. But we certainly need more people who are available to help community members who are in need, so that's a real platform of mine. I am a local Ann Arborite. I'm proud to say I'm a river rat. I found out that Alex Yerke was a river rat too. I had no idea. Anyway, I'm a local from way back. I have deep roots in this community, and you know, I'm running for this seat because I want to be the probate judge, and that's really all I want to be. I don't want to be any other kind of judge. And I think that this seat will, for all practical purposes, is likely to remain this way indefinitely. So thank you for having us, and I'm pleased to answer any questions.
Judge Outside. Yeah.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Julia Outside. As David said, I was recently appointed to the probate judge position. How that came about was Judge Wheeler retired early for health reasons. So after she retired, all five of us on the ballot put our name in to be appointed to that position. The appointment process included two very lengthy applications, 25, 30 pages long, asking every question from your job since you were 18 to everything you own, every debt you have. The process also included interviews with local attorneys, both people that had put down as references and people I had not put down as references, contacted the local bar and got information from them. And then two lengthy interviews. The first interview was with the State Bar Judicial Qualifications Committee, where you walk into a room and there's about 20 attorneys lined up on an arc table and you're sitting there by yourself at the other side. And then in a second interview with the governor's legal staff. And through that appointment process, I was appointed probate judge. So I'm proud to have gotten that appointment. I think my experience that I had that led to that appointment was I've been an attorney for 24 years, and I started my first 9 years as an advocate. So I spent 1 year as a Michigan Assistant Attorney General in the Wayne County Probate Court representing the Department of Human Services on abuse and neglect cases. I then spent 8 years here in the Washtenaw County Probate Court, in the Washtenaw County Prosecutor's Office, and I tried over 50 felony jury trials. I tried every kind of criminal case from assault and battery, domestic violence, sexual assault, up to murder trials. And then in 1999, I transitioned from being an advocate to being a decision maker in the courtroom. And that's a big shift. It's a shift from being an advocate to being the talker, to advocating for a client, to being the person who instead in the courtroom listens to what people have to say. And I made that transition 14 years ago. And as a juvenile court referee, it's similar to a judge in many ways. We took part of the judge's docket, gave it to the referee. My primary assignment was juvenile delinquency cases. So I conducted trials and decided whether the prosecutor had or had not proven that a youngster had committed a crime. I then made a decision about what the probationary term should be for that youngster, and then made decisions about where that youngster's placement should be, whether it should be in the home, whether for their safety or the community's safety, they needed to be out of the home. That also involved child welfare cases. So if the Department of Human Services thought a child was in an unsafe situation and needed to be removed from the home, DHS would call me sometimes in the middle of the night, say, here's the situation, can I or can I not remove this child from the home? So those are the kinds of decisions I've already been making for 14 years. Then 3 years ago, I was also appointed Deputy Probate Register. So that got me into the probate court. I review all the applications for deceased estates cases. So for the last 3 years, looked at every will that has come into the probate court. I also did hearings on minor guardianship and conservatorship cases, so again, continuing the decision-making as to those cases. And then with this appointment, I'm now doing the docket that the elected judge in January is going to be doing. Once I got the appointment, they decided to go ahead and just start that docket now. So I have a probate docket as well as a divestiture docket. I think what speaks volumes to me, besides getting the appointment itself, which is wonderful, that I also have the endorsement of both the prosecutor and the public defender. So I spent 14 years making decisions with the prosecutor on one side and the public defender's office on the other. To get the endorsement of both of them to say that they feel that I'm making fair decisions, I think says volumes about my experience. Thanks.
Thank you. And lastly, Tracy Vandenberg, if you could introduce yourself to the audience.
Absolutely. So I'm Tracy Vandenberg. I'm an attorney currently with Legal Services of South Central Michigan. For those of you who aren't familiar, although I expect that many of you are, Legal Services is a nonprofit organization that provides free legal assistance to low-income residents in Washtenaw County. Since joining Legal Services, I've represented over 1,200 low-income residents in the county who otherwise would not be able to have legal representation in the courtroom. As an attorney at Legal Services, I've tried dozens of cases. I've argued successfully at the Court of Appeals. I practice in all the courts in Washtenaw County, district, circuit, probate, practiced in the appellate courts as well as the federal courts. At Legal Services, I do specialize in family law, probate litigation, especially in terms of minor guardianship cases, and also in working with individuals with significant mental health issues. As Jane pointed out earlier, the probate docket, the majority of the probate docket deals with vulnerable individuals, people with disabilities, overall people with cognitive impairments. And that's why I was so excited to have the opportunity to run for this position, because I bring a new perspective to the bench, or potentially to the bench. First of all, I'm not just a lawyer, but I'm a clinical social worker. I may not be the longest practicing lawyer in the group, although people will tell you several years of legal aid is like 20 years of practice because we carry such high caseloads, which frankly is pretty relevant to being a judge because you need to know how to carry a docket and move it and have a high caseload on a limited budget. So I'm very good at that and also providing excellent service. But my 20 years combined experience also includes over a decade as a clinical social worker, where I actually treated individuals who had mental health issues, provided direct group and individual psychotherapy assessment, biopsychosocial assessments. I was also the mental health director for an adolescent substance abuse program where I had adolescents from the inner city with substance abuse issues under my care in a day treatment facility. As a matter of fact, many of those adolescents were adolescents I, you know, took into my program to keep them out of the school to prison pipeline, because otherwise they were either coming to me or they were going to Spofford, which is a very rough juvenile detention center in New York. So in terms of a new perspective, what I bring to this position is one, a combination of a law degree and a clinical social work degree, which is directly relevant to a docket that primarily deals with mental health and cognitive issues. Two, I also bring the fact that not a single judge on our bench currently comes from a Legal Services background. There is not one judge on the trial court who has exclusively represented low-income individuals as an advocate and worked for them. So I bring the perspective of somebody who knows how difficult it is for people to access the justice system. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to some questions from the audience and questions from me. For the audience, matter of process, if you haven't contributed some questions so far, please do so. I'll be looking through those and see if we can come up with some good, picky questions. All right, here's an interesting one. We're going to start with Tamara Garwood.
Yeah.
You're up next, then we'll go down the road.
Can I ask a procedural question?
Yes.
Thank you. Are questions going to be asked of everyone or just a particular candidate? Just so we know.
I'm planning, I think
The goal was to have everyone answer the question.
Yeah,
yeah.
One or two questions have been directed at proposed questions, but I'd rather see the questions that go through. Everybody give everybody a chance to answer those.
Thank
We're
you.
Not going to put any particular people on the spot or anything like that.
Just curious.
So I saw a question here. It says, are any of you a member of the Federalist Society? If so, can you elaborate on your stand and belief in applying the law, especially, so it says here, especially in civil rights cases. But let's think broadly about what civil rights cases are, and the civil rights of a lot of individuals are impacted in the probate and family law docket. And if you want to expand on that, if not the Federalist Society, you can talk, each of the candidates can talk about what groups you are members of and where you have contributed your money or your time.
Sure, thank you. I am not a member of the Federalist Society, never been. I think it's important in my mind to talk about people's civil liberties and about their independence, especially when we're talking about the probate court. I think it's critical that as a judge in the probate court, you make sure that you really use the least restrictive means to help people, individuals, and to protect society. Oftentimes in probate court, we're faced with decisions where someone is at risk of harming themselves and harming society. And there are a wide variety of options available to help individuals. And I think it's important that you use the least restrictive means. Not everyone needs full guardianship. And in those circumstances, they shouldn't have a full guardianship. So I think you really have to be very careful to use a balancing test to see individual needs and individual rights and to protect those individual needs, only restricting them when absolutely necessary.
Great, thank you. And for these questions, we'll try to keep it to 90 seconds. That's good timing. Constance Jones.
I am not a member of the Federalist Society, nor have I ever been. I contribute my money to Ozone House, Democratic causes. I am also pro-choice and have been active in that as a movement. So those are my primary things that I support. I think civil liberties in the context of the probate court is extremely important. It's a docket that deals with mental health cases, and that's an important issue. And it's also a docket that deals with guardianship and conservatorship. Michigan is unfortunately one of the worst states in terms of raw numbers of guardianships that are in place. So we need to do a better job of making sure that there are protections for people who are coming in front of the court to have a guardianship or a conservatorship established. I think there was a study many years ago by the Institute of Social Gerontology that said by the time a case got to the point in front of a court, the imposition of a guardianship or conservatorship took about 2 minutes to be undertaken. So I think it's a process of making sure as a judge that you absolutely adhere to all of the due process protections that are in the laws about guardianship and conservatorship, appointing attorneys, making sure that people are properly represented. Because it's a very, like child abuse cases, in my view, once a guardian is appointed, it's very difficult to sort of turn that train back. So it's a very important issue. Thank you, David. You don't even have to do the gavel, you just have to raise it.
Julia.
Yes, thank you. Most of the causes I've been involved with have involved children. So things I'm involved with, I'm a 4-H leader, and I'm also involved in alternative education opportunities for children. I was on the board of directors of COPE, and I'm also on a committee. It was started as a statewide program with a probate judge from Midland. Got behind his program to stop the school-to-prison pipeline. So it's a school justice committee. I'm on the Washtenaw County. Each county has a group. I'm on the Washtenaw County board, and they just are in the process of working together, proposed legislation to stop school suspensions and to increase or decrease truancy from school. So the idea behind stopping school suspensions is to have safeguards in place all along the way to make it harder to suspend a child. If a child is in school and learning, they're not on their way to prison. And part of it is getting this common language. Each county defines truancy in a different way, defines absenteeism from school differently, so if we're all using the same language and then coming to a common ground to do that. So everything I've been involved in, particularly having been in the juvenile court, I've seen how important it is to keep kids in school, to stay out of the prison system. There's also another local group I'm involved with as well. It's just a county group, and that is also trying to save alternative programming for children, because as school cuts happen, the first thing that goes are these kids at risk. There are programs for them. They're expensive, but they're a lot cheaper than prison. So that's what we're trying to do, is keep those kids in school and out of being on the way to prison.
And as the Federalist Society members?
No.
Tracy Vandenberg.
Well, I've never been a member of the Federalist Society, nor do I ever expect that I will be, frankly. I'm a member of Michigan Trial Lawyers Association. I'm a member of the Michigan Democratic Party. I give to causes that support LGBT rights, Planned Parenthood, Democratic causes. Also, I'm very involved with animal rescue work, and I do a lot of foster work for a variety of animal rescue organizations. I sit on the board of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill here in Washtenaw County, as well as the Michigan Prisoner Reentry Initiative. So those are some of the things I'm involved with. I mean, one of the reasons, in terms of the civil rights question, one of the core tenets of my candidacy is equal access to justice, because I see on a daily basis what happens to clients that don't have legal representation. Every time I have to turn a client down and send them into court without a lawyer, I'm fearful for them. And I cannot tell you how many times I've had clients come in after a first hearing when something's gone terribly awry that is in contravention to the statutes. And that has either come about because there was no lawyer there to act as a check and balance for that individual, or the person wasn't able to articulate their case well, and so the case was decided incorrectly. And often, as a legal services attorney, I come in after the fact to fix what happened to a client who went in and didn't have representation.
Thank you. You are done. So we're going to move on to Constance Jones. It's the next question, but
I didn't get a chance to answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're going around.
And I've got such a good answer.
Okay. That's good.
Myself on the back. No, I really want you to know my position. I am not a member of the Federalist Society. I have never been. I, like Tracy, cannot envision a time when I would be. I am, however, very supportive of individual civil rights and civil rights for groups. I have worked very hard on LGBT rights and the rights of children of LGBT folks. In 2003, I co-founded the Coalition for Adoption Rights Equality here in Washtenaw County. We heavily lobbied the state legislature for changes in the law so that children of same-sex couples would have the legal protections of both parents. I've worked on the national level with the National Center for Lesbian Rights as part of their Family Law Advisory Committee for the past 10 years. I have the endorsement of the former chair of the what we refer to as Quad A, it's the American Academy of Adoption Attorneys, and she is now the chair of the American Association of Assisted Reproduction Technology Attorneys. I had to write that down and get it absolutely right. We call it ARDA. And so that organization works very hard on reproductive freedoms, both in preventing unwanted pregnancies, but also to help people who want families to be able to form those families. I am a member of NALA, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, and do speaking both on the state and the national level on those issues. When it comes to children, I believe that the decision should be made from the perspective of the best interest of the child, whether it's a...
Thank you.
Ask me later.
Great. And Constance Jones, I just wanted to, do you prefer Connie or Constance?
Connie, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the campaign stuff with Constance on it. I wouldn't know what you prefer. Connie, please tell us, I wanted to follow up on something that Tracy raised, and that is about access to justice and about whether the people that come before the court are getting a fair shake, even if they don't have representation. Is that an issue in the court? And if so, is there a way that you would propose improving it? That's a big question for all.
So I think that is an issue in the court. I think it's an issue in all courts, but the probate court, more than other courts, I think, probably has a larger percentage of people who come into the court wanting to proceed without attorneys, both in terms of trying to do a guardianship or a conservatorship on their own, or a name change, or also trying to settle a will or a parent's deceased estate. So I think that there's more unrepresented people, I think that is true as a whole, in the probate court versus a criminal court or even a divorce court. So it's an issue, and how to increase access to good representation. I mean, part of that I think happens first when somebody walks into the court and the kind of service that they receive right from the clerk's office when they walk into the court. And perhaps references or referrals to any number of agencies that could help and also have attorneys appointed. And appointing attorneys, that does go on in the probate court quite a bit in all sorts of cases and has to continue. And that's probably one of the best ways is to shore up that program of continued appointment of attorneys.
Thank you. Julia.
Yes, just so folks understand, in probate court, the vulnerable adult is represented. So in a guardianship or a conservatorship case, if a family member comes in and says, I need to be appointed guardian or conservator of my parent who is now elderly and can't make their own decisions, we appoint first a guardian ad litem who is an attorney for that person, the proposed ward. So they're appointed a guardian ad litem from the court. That person goes, does an interview of the proposed ward, the family members, and then they bring a report back to the court, so that they're the eyes and ears of the court. They come back and make a recommendation to the court. If from that recommendation, the parties are in agreement, then a guardianship or conservatorship can be put in place. If the ward contests that, we will then appoint an attorney for them to come have the hearing in court, and they are given a court-appointed attorney. In the mental health hearings, again, if a family member comes in, says that my family member needs to be hospitalized, who needs to be ordered to get court-ordered treatment, that person is automatically appointed an attorney. So I don't want you to think that the wards themselves are not represented. They are. Who's not represented often is the family member who's coming in and asking for it. So it can be difficult for them to navigate. We have packets at the front so that they have all that information. We're in the process of getting short videos. We've run into a problem. We've gotten a couple completed, but short videos so that they can watch that and learn how to complete the process. So it's those folks that often have a little trouble navigating. Our bar does a pretty good job at probate bar volunteers. Once a month is a day that people can come in and get free legal advice from the probate bar.
Tracy Vanderbilt, same question.
Sure, absolutely. You know, where I see a lot of the issues are on the family law docket and in minor guardianship cases when people go in unrepresented, especially biological parents. And really not understanding what those statutes mean. So what the potential ramifications are, which frankly in a minor guardianship case could ultimately lead to the loss of your parental rights over a long period of time. So they're pretty significant issues. So what I, you know, always talk about is one, you know, as a judge, encouraging members of the Bar Association to do pro bono work. At Legal Services, I run the pro bono program, so in addition to my daily work as an attorney, I'm now the person who coordinates with private attorneys to refer out cases in order to expand our services. In addition to that, I think one of the issues is access to justice, is how do we make impartial decisions? And the way we make impartial decisions is by making sure that we have all the facts. And so if you have one person who comes into the court represented and one person who comes in without representation, it is extremely important that the judge is active in order to make sure the person who is unrepresented gets his story or her story out. Because we only make impartial decisions if we have all the facts. And so if there are situations where a judge needs to be more active and ask more questions, not from an advocacy position, but from a fact finder position, In order to get all those facts to make an accurate decision, we need to be doing that. That is not advocacy. The judge has the right to do that under the rules of evidence, under the court procedures. So that's something I would, you know, advocate for.
Thank you. Jane Bassett, please.
Thank you. I absolutely agree with Tracy on this. I think that it's up to the judge to ask more questions to be able to get the story out if they're if the person is having difficulty telling their story. So often people who appear in the probate courts have never had to have any contact with the court or with attorneys. They don't know what to expect. They don't understand the rules of the court, the procedural rules, and it's sometimes very frustrating for a judge who has been sitting there and hearing 30 cases come through in a span of an hour and a half to have that last person up there saying things that the judge thinks is irrelevant. But the judge has to maintain their composure, maintain their patience, help that person through the process so that the information is all out there on the record. It is so critical. I also think that tapping the bar for help with more pro bono cases is absolutely critical. Oftentimes we have people come into our office who obviously don't have the means to pay. We do what's called a reverse referral. We send them over to legal services to do the intake to make sure that they've meet the qualifications for pro bono services so that we're not in a position of asking those sensitive questions, and then ask that they be referred back so that we can represent them on a pro bono basis. I think that that's a marvelous tool, and it needs to be used more often.
And lastly, Tammy Garland, this question.
Thank you. I agree that it is important that a judge does not just sit and listen. They have to be an advocate for the law, and that means they have to be actively involved in ferreting out the truth so that they can make well-informed decisions. And I think that's very important for the litigants and for the entire process. I think there's several ways that you ensure equal and open access to justice. I think you have well-trained staff. I think you have a judge who is well-prepared in advance of hearings beginning. I agree with Connie that we certainly need to increase involvement and increase the numbers of people who accept appointments as conservators and as guardians. I attended a training for guardians and conservators, and the room was packed. I don't think there was an open seat in that room, and not a lot of people from that room actually volunteered to be put on the list to take the appointments, and that's a problem. I do a lot of pro bono work in my private practice, and I would challenge other attorneys to do that as well. The bar doesn't require us to do pro bono work, it encourages us to do pro bono work. And I think it's important that as lawyers we make a commitment to do so to help provide access to justice. The other thing I think that's important, you've heard packets of information are provided where people represent themselves. The problem is, if you walk into the clerk's office or the probate office, and you don't speak English, you have a problem. We need to have multi-language options available. We need to increase customer service so that if you don't understand, you can get the help that you need. And there are a variety of ways to do that, but we definitely need to have help.
I'd like you to comment a little bit for the next question on judicial temperament, what you think it takes to be a judge, and temperament-wise, and how your skills, your background, might lend themselves to that. Okay, Julia, that's it.
Sure, thank you. It takes clearly a lot of patience. You have to be first prepared when you go in the courtroom, and then takes certainly a fair amount of patience. I think the difference between me and the other candidates is you can go back and look at my decisions for the last 14 years, talk to people who have seen me make decisions for the last 14 years, and get an idea of my temperament on the bench. I'm courteous to participants, but they're also, it's a courtroom. There are rules, and you are required to follow the rules in the courtroom as well. In juvenile court, well, in any decision, it's always a balancing act. So when I was making a decision about children, you had to know that the youngster is in front of you for having committed a crime, but there's also a story that brought them there. one of the youngsters who still breaks my heart to this day that I had to deal with was a youngster who was initially in a neglect placement, and on his 11th birthday, his mother made a big commotion about wanting to go see him at his placement on his 11th birthday. We had to change schedules, we had to find her transportation, we went above and beyond trying to get her to visit on his 11th birthday. We did all that, and then little Kenny sat there in the room waiting for his mom to show, and she never showed up. So Kenny then later is a very angry young man, and he's in front of me for having committed a very serious offense. So you have to balance, he did commit a serious offense, but you have to know where he came from. And knowing that history, you have to be able to balance that and make that tough decision about those children.
Okay. Tracy Vandenberg.
Sure. You know, I agree, patience, I actually think a sense of humor can go a long way sometimes in a difficult situation if it's used correctly. I mean, one of the things that really I've used, because I think most people, if you've worked at legal services, you know we have some of the most difficult clients. Many of my clients have very little education. The majority have almost majority of my clients have psychiatric disabilities, other disabilities, also many, many language barriers. And so, you know, as a legal services attorney, you really learn how to engage people from all walks of life. Essentially, in addition to that, being a trained clinical social worker, one of the things that I was trained for was to be empathic and compassionate towards my clients while remaining objective and remaining calm and objective and neutral. And so that's a skill set, you know, when you're treating someone on a daily basis, you know, treating someone with a mental illness, that's something you're using all the time. And I've taken that into my legal practice, and I think it will serve me well if I'm elected.
Thank you, Regina. Same question, comment a bit on temperament and your background that will lend to the proper temperament for a judge.
I think a judge needs to be patient and a good listener, because sometimes people get up there and want to tell a whole bunch of things that don't have anything to do with the case at hand. But I also think that the judge needs to have the ability to listen to that information, distill it quickly so that they know what is relevant, what's not, assess that case for the ability of the parties to be able to resolve it. So either through mediation, the peacemaking court, some type of an alternative dispute resolution process. And then if it is clearly not going to be the type of case that has an option to settle, then to make a decision in a timely way. The families that come before the court need resolution, and it's always better if they can come to that resolution on their own. But if they can't, the decision needs to be made in a timely way so that family can move on. This is the kind of thing that I've been doing in my conference room for the past 20 years, sitting down with families, going through a list, and usually within an hour, we've got a good roadmap for going forward with that family, whether it's, okay, we need to do powers of attorney, we need to do a guardianship matter, we need to move some assets around and apply for Medicaid, we need to go to the Veterans Administration and apply for that. Generally, within an hour of sitting down with a new client, we've got a roadmap for going forward. And I think that a judge needs to have those skills to be able to look at everything quickly, decide, and be able to get that family on the right path.
Thank you. And Tammy Garland, same question.
I just have to say, there's something sort of disconcerting in your peripheral vision to see someone with a gavel kind of swinging it. And I don't think that should count towards my time. Regarding judicial temperament, I actually think of Corinthians, which starts out that love is patient and love is kind, and I think a judge needs to be patient and kind. I think a judge needs to be an actively involved participant in finding justice and finding the truth for people. I think my judicial temperament, I am open-minded, again, being a child, so I strongly believe in fairness, and I bring a lot of compassion with me. I wanted to go back to a prior question that was about civil liberties and talking about whether anyone's a member of the Federalist Society. And I just wanted to mention my involvement in the community because I think that's relevant to who I am and what kind of judge I will be. I volunteer in the Ann Arbor Public Schools and the Be the Good program, where you can go to any school within the system and volunteer and do a wide variety of things. I mopped the floors one day. I've done flashcards in special needs classrooms. I participate in Christmas in Action, which provides home repair to disabled people and to elderly people of low income.
Thank you. You're about to get the gavel swinging.
That time I didn't see it.
Connie, can you please address that?
Well, it would be hard to add to all the qualities that people have already said in terms of sense of humor and patience and ability to listen. I think it's very important for a judge to be able to discern when parties need a decision versus when parties need to be helped to find an alternative way to make decisions. So I think that's a very important skill. The other thing I wanted to mention is, although this isn't exactly temperament, it might be, I think our judges should be more involved in our community in some ways. I think our judiciary is quite, at present, very isolated. And I think that's something that I would really like to see change and do, you know, within appropriate levels or sources of involvement, to be more involved in our community, be more of a public and community presence. So that I put in temperament as well.
Thank you very much. We're about to wrap up pretty soon here, but there are some issues that came up in some of the questions here that I wanted to make sure we address briefly. So I want to, I want to wrap up very shortly here. We have to move on to the circuit court race and hear from our candidates there. But a few rapid fire questions, not 90 seconds, one sentence or less. There's a question here that says every election cycle candidates seem to ignore local election laws with regard to lawn signs. All of you are running and asking voters to place their trust in you and uphold and interpret the law. Why should we vote for you if we see your yard signs illegally placed? Let me turn that. Would each of you pledge to keep your lawn signs in legally appropriate places and to work with your supporters to make sure they do the same? That goes to Tracy Vanderbrook first.
Yes, and I will tell you, it has been very difficult because my friends see all these illegally placed lawn signs and want to know why mine aren't there. And I keep saying it's because I'm running for judicial office, so they shouldn't be placed in the right of way. So the answer is yes. I will not give
it. Thank you. Jane Best.
Yes, I have put it up on my website, I have put it up on my Facebook, I have sent out notices to my supporters to please, you know, the list of rules, first of all, and second of all, if you see one that's illegally placed, please let me know, we will go and retrieve it. So, okay. Offer to the public.
Thank you. And Tammy Garrett.
Of course I agree. In fact, last night I was out near Willow Run and found one of my signs illegally placed and of course was horrified, found a safe place to pull over and pulled it. But I have to tell you, there were 7 signs there and mine was one of them. So I pulled my own and I left everyone else's because it's not my position to pull the other signs. But they're everywhere and just like Jane, I encourage people to only put signs where you are allowed to put signs, where you have permission to put signs, and I hope people follow those rules.
Okay, thank you. Kind job.
Yes, I absolutely would pledge that. And the other reason why is I hate litter, you know. I can't stand when somebody throws something out their car or something. So I think it's really important and I have encouraged my supporters to only follow the rules.
Okay, and Julia.
Yes, I know it's frustrating with every election. They're ugly. I wish we didn't have yard signs anywhere. I know they're difficult to look at. We got a email recently to all the candidates saying that someone had taken a picture of every candidate and someone assigned someone where it didn't belong. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Let us know. We're happy to pull them. I think people get overexcited that are working for you. We're happy whenever we see them, pull them. Let us know if you see one. Happy to.
I think that was a good question and good to get the pledge. And what we're hearing is that the candidates aren't always in control of where those signs go. But glad to hear that everybody's going to do the best to police their own supporters and make sure they go in the right places. Another rapid-fire question, this will start with Jane Bassett. As to political contributions, have you ever contributed to a Republican candidate? And if so, who was the last Republican candidate?
I can't recall any time, quite honestly. I don't make a lot of political contributions at all, but of late, I guess I have been, the ones that I have made have been to Democratic candidates.
Okay, Tammy Dalton.
I'm thinking about it too. Off the top of my head, I can't remember any recent contributions to Republicans. As a child, I grew up in a very red, so to speak, location, and my parents were very involved, and one of their dear friends was a member of Congress, and so we spent a lot of time with that person, and I know we contributed to his campaign in time and in money, but I just, you know, I guess I have support of Republicans and Democrats and independents, and I don't make contributions based on necessarily somebody's political party or views.
So you can't recall?
I can't recall.
Okay. Kind of.
No.
And Julia.
No, I've been under the rules of judicial canons, judicial ethics canons, since I was referee. They're also called referee. And so we're not involved in political races, and everything I give cause to involves children.
Okay. Thank you, and Tracy Vanderbilt.
No.
Let's, we're going to have to wrap up now. Thank you, each of you, for being here. We clearly have a great pool of candidates for this race, qualified people here that can lend a lot to the bench. One more rapid-fire question. You've got qualified people here. You've got interesting backgrounds. How would you ask somebody in one sentence or one characteristic ask somebody to choose you over another candidate? What distinguishes you that should be a deciding factor? We're starting with Tammy Garland.
Thank you. I think my wide variety of experience is really what distinguishes me. I've been in private practice. I've worked in prosecutors.
Rapid fire. Wide variety of experience.
A wide variety of experience.
Connie Jones.
Mine would be most experience and most relevant experience.
Julia.
I've already been a decision maker for 14 years, so you already know what I'm going to do and how I'm going to act.
Tracy Pender.
Combined expertise, social work and law directly relevant to the probate court position.
Thank you. Jane Bass.
Tough on exploitation, financial exploitation, and committed to individual constitutional rights.
Great. Thank you all. We'll wrap up here so we can move on to the other.